Hello, and welcome to the Responsive Family Sleep Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Hawley, holistic sleep coach, lactation consultant, peaceful parenting educator, and mom. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by all the conflicting sleep info, frustrated with sleep information that just plain felt wrong, or searched desperately for a truly gentle and responsive sleep approach, then you are in the right place. In each episode, we'll be answering your most pressing baby and toddler sleep questions, busting those sleep myths, and helping you understand truly developmental, biologically normal baby and toddler sleep, plus encouraging you to trust your intuition along the way. Let's get started. Welcome to this week's episode. I am so excited to have my sleep coach bestie and very good friend Niecy on with me, and we are talking about toddler sleep specifically and the misconceptions, the myths, the misinformation that you get as a parent, and some of the ways you're going to think about sleep a little differently in this phase. Niecy, I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit and share about why you love working with the toddlers and the big kids, because that is your specialty.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yeah. So I am a twin mom. My boys are six now, and I ventured out, you know, when they were little to become a sleep coach, largely because I didn't want to go back to work. It was kind of, you know, a random thing. It wasn't something that, you know, I was like, oh my God, I've always wanted to be a sleep coach, but it just fit. You know, I was helping my friends get their kids to sleep and, you know, learning about it because, well, I had twins. So you really need to make sure they sleep well or else you get no sleep. And so that started when I was pregnant. I read so many books about sleep because, you know, everybody likes to comment about you when you have a big old baby belly, and they just scared me thinking that I would never sleep again. And, you know, it was hard for sure, but, you know, we did okay. It wasn't really until they turned two, you know, the toddler years, where, you know, just sleep went haywire, and it really made me realize that there's not enough information in this world about supporting kids with sleep. Most of it's around babies or adults, and or taking, you know, baby and adult information and trying to apply it to kids. You know, like even if you type in like toddler sleep, most of the information that comes up is like pictures of babies and like tips for babies. So yeah, I just kind of decided this is where I'm meant to be. I did what I always do, is I geeked out and became a parent coach and read what I could about kids and sleep. And here we are now. This is what I love doing, is working with, you know, toddlers, preschoolers, and really, you know, those school aged kids.
So funny. First of all, I always forget that your twins are only about a year older than my daughter. But also, we are so similar in the geeking out on information and exact opposites, because I read nothing about sleep before my oldest was born. I was just like, oh, whatever, baby's wake, it's fine. And then was like, oh my God, like baby's wake, yes, but what the heck? Like,
yeah,
it's funny. It's very atypical.
I think it probably would have been the same way as you. It was just, you know, people scared me.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. So I know it's something that you and I both say a lot of, right? That there's a lot of crazy information out there, and that shifting from baby to toddler is different. You know, I support toddlers up to around three-ish. So we kind of overlap in the toddler years. From your perspective, what would you say the top kind of myths, misconceptions, areas that tend to trip parents up because of the info that's out there? What are those in sort of the toddler and headed into the big kid world?
Oh, there's so many. You know, I think the big one that trips pretty much everyone up is just not having realistic expectations on what child sleep should look like or does look like. I hate the word should, but like that, because it's just, we are sold this idea from day one that if you put in your healthy sleep habits and you're, you know, be careful with your sleep associations and, you know, the sleep training culture, that eventually they will start to sleep through the night and then you're golden. This is the idea, right? Especially, and same for those families that are like, you know, breastfeeding, they're like holding onto the hope that once we, you know, we night wean, we'll sleep, we'll be golden. And it really, it doesn't work like that. It, generally speaking, yes, sleep does consolidate, which is when, you know, you get the longer stretches and the less wakes, right? But it's not necessarily in a straight line. It's kind of back and forth. And in so many ways, kids wake up just as much as, you know, younger toddlers or older babies do, but they just wake up for different things. And so new problems start to emerge where it takes longer for them to fall asleep because, you know, they have emotional things to process, and because they, you know, haven't seen you all day because they're at school or daycare, or, you know, they're scared, you know, the fears start to develop. And so night waking, you know, can happen for so many different things. And then there's the crawling into your bed because they can walk now and they're not in a crib anymore. Or even if they were in a crib, sometimes they just like scream until you come, right? And, you know, because they can talk and voice their opinions. And so this is the big thing, I think, is that we think it's going to be easier than it is, that like we've gotten there, but for so many families it gets worse, or it just doesn't get better, and you start to see your friends' kids sleeping better and you're like, oh my goodness, what am I doing wrong? And it's like the guilt and the shame and the what am I doing wrong, I've screwed them up, like this is what I see every day, all day in my work, and it breaks my heart.
Yeah, I mean, that guilt and shame is, I mean, it starts, I feel like, from day one, and it just spirals and gets redefined as, you know, as they grow. And I always hate getting asked that question by, like, you know, an older baby parent or like a really younger toddler parent. They're like, when can I expect that they're going to go all night long and not need me? And I'm just like, well, I mean, statistically, more kiddos don't need you as they get older for at least a period of time, but exactly what you were just saying there, right? Like, but there's all sorts of new stuff that comes in, and, you know, there isn't just this magical point where we're going to have better sleep.
I mean, it does slowly get better. Like, I like to tell families to like zoom it out. So instead of like focusing on like today, look at like the last week or look at the last month, compare this month to a month, like 6 months from now or before, sorry, 6 months before, or like, you know, 8 months before. And chances are it is getting better. It just doesn't always look like it in those moments. There'll be like overall, you know, night wakings will decrease, but it's not like all of a sudden, first they have three wakes, then they have two wakes, then we have one wake. It's more, you know, just kind of scattered than that, where you might have a few weeks of where they're sleeping through the night, and then you might have a few days where they're waking up like five times and you're like, what is going on with this world? And so it's really hard to kind of judge what's normal and what's not.
Yeah. And I think especially with some of the older toddlers that I see, and I'm sure you see it too, there's this, like, we might have a long stretch of really awesome sleep, but then something else comes up. And suddenly we're back in that sort of more troubling pattern, which is, of course, when, you know, one of the ways parents of like older toddlers, preschoolers, and the bigger kids are reaching out. Some of them, of course, have horrible sleep, hard sleep the whole time, but we can get those like really smooth sailing times, and then something else is going on, and sleep is suddenly messier and harder, and they're waking more.
I feel like with as you get older though, and you have language at your own ability, that there is in some ways, like, it's normal for them to wake, but there's also so much that you can do to support them to get things better. And so I don't want, if you're listening to this, I don't want you to think, okay, this is normal, I'll just wait it out. There's almost always something that you can do to make things better than they are if you're struggling right now, even if it is normal. So just throwing that out there, you know, it's different with babies. So many things are needs, right? Like, they are such vulnerable little beings, and they are reliant on you for everything, and toddlers are too. But, you know, there's it's not just the basic survival things like with babies and toddlers, there's so many other connection things that you can do and nice little routines. And
yeah, I often find parents struggling with the needs and the wants in the toddler years. And, you know, how do we start navigating that as we move out of the baby phase and move into the toddler phase?
Well, and even just what is a toddler?
Right? Yeah. Well, yes, different definitions.
Some people consider a toddler 12 months. Some people don't consider it till two. Some people it's like 1 to 2. Some it's like 2 to 5, you know? And so you gotta be careful of what people are saying because you don't know what age they're referring to.
And but then there's the whole like neuroscience brain folks who say like 0 to 3 is infancy. And I get it from like a neuroscience perspective, but it also drives me crazy. I'm like, no, I'm coming from the public health background, right? Like infant is 0 to 12 months, toddler is like 1 to 3. I'm more loose on that. But like, to me, that 12 month cutoff is hard on it being an infant just from like that public health, maternal child public health background. That's where it always was. And so, but you're right. What people consider is important when we're thinking about what sleep information to take on board, like, is it actually matching where your kiddo's at? Because a 15 month old is totally different than a 3 year old as far as their capabilities and what they can handle.
And people will call them both toddlers. I mean, my kids toddlers and they're 6.
Oh yeah, I think people like to extend the toddler forever and ever and ever.
It's always going to be my toddler. Yeah.
One thing that I know that I see, and I'm sure you see a lot as far as like misconception, is like independence, right, around falling asleep and that process. So share a little bit maybe about how you see that evolve with the information that parents are receiving and how to kind of navigate that.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to what we talked about with just expecting them to be able to sleep through the night, is that we also expect them to be able to, okay, great, they can brush their teeth now and they can put their pajamas on, great. Go brush your teeth, put your pajamas on, okay? Like, you expect to be able to just, you know, say these commands and have them be able to get ready for bed by themselves. You know, the world is cultured in a way that we see on TV and all these different things, and that nobody really shares their, you know, their problems on the outside, that we don't really realize how much work it goes into bedtime. And it's not just the, you know, helping them brush their teeth, reading them a story and kissing them on the head and saying goodnight. I mean, you can get that. I mean, this is that, that's what I help parents get similarly to in my programs, right? But you have to have all the right foundations in place for them to be, you know, calm and feel connected and all these different things for an independent bedtime to happen. And so many parents just want to fast forward through that.
Yeah.
And so that's the big thing, is that I can't remember the stat. Oh, I wish I had it. But it's like most, you know, school age kids can't put them to bed 100% independently. So even once you're in like kindergarten, grade 1, grade 2, they still need some support from their parents to do bedtime. So this idea of a 100% independent bedtime is just not realistic. Can you have your child be able to fall asleep alone and walk out of the room? Absolutely, yes. But you're going to have to help them at some point, you know, somewhat.
Yeah. I don't know about your kiddos, but like my oldest is 10. And as we get settled down, because we enjoy, right, being involved in our kiddos' bedtime as a family. So that's obviously an intentional choice. But like all the thoughts spill out from him in particular, more so than my 5-year-old at bedtime. And so for a while, because, you know, being a sleep coach doesn't mean you always do the best things with your own kids. For a while, I was really getting frustrated with that, because I'm like, oh my God, it's sleep time. I want to go to bed. I am not a night person. Mm-hmm. And my oldest is, he tends to later in his sleep rhythms than me. Like he would happily go to bed after me, but he can't because he has to get up at school. So he has to get no sleep. And we would always struggle with this. And finally, I was like, we just need to build in time. Like you need to offload and you aren't going to do it at any other time. And we need to hear what you're saying. And once we like, you know, leaned into the need, and then all of a sudden we get that and we've worked around it, and it's just so much better. And he gets his offloading time, you know, where he's ready.
Offloading time for a lot of kids, because you're relaxed and they have your attention. Mm-hmm. And they know you're probably not going anywhere, right? Like it's very common for kids to unload in that time. Yeah. And building it is important. Otherwise, you feel like you need to rush it, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And
Yep. I want you to share a little bit about the misinformation about connection because I know I see a lot of it. I know you talk about it a lot also. And so let's talk about that need for connection and versus attention and all of that that's out there.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the big misconceptions we have about the bedtime routine is that it's designed to help kids get to have that structure for getting ready to bed for bed. And yes, that's a good big reason what the bedtime routine is for. We need to go to the bathroom and get our pajamas on and brush our teeth, right? But really, the bedtime routine is a wonderful time and opportunity to, slow the day down. Connect with your kids, put the phones down, turn the TVs off, and just like talk, like look at them in the eyes, be, silly and cute and connecting. And when you're connected with kids, they listen better. And so it helps with, the commands aspect of things, but also it reduces so many different behaviors. What a lot of people don't understand is that bedtime is like a goodbye, right? Even you're for a lot of families, you're separated into separate different rooms. And even if you're not separated, if it's different rooms, if you're sharing a room with your child, you're still separated in the sense that like you're in different, conscious spaces, right? Your child is dreaming, they're not physically with you. Or I guess they're physically with you, not mentally with you. And so we are kind of we're a community species where we are designed to be close together. And when we are unconscious, we are super vulnerable as a species. Like if we're not protected in our house, we're outside in the elements, we could get eaten by animals, we could freeze to death, all of these different things. And so at this basic level, kids have this like instinct to be close to their parents, especially at night when they're super vulnerable. And this process happens unconsciously, where there's this urge, there's this internal drive for kids to be close to their parents when they feel that there is a separation, right? And they know there's a separation because we have the bedtime routine. It happens every single night. So their body can start to sense that this is happening, and it can cause kids to go, well, to attention seek. I don't like to call it attention seek. I like to call it connection seeking because they're wanting to connect with you. But, the extra glasses of water, the extra stories, the wait, please don't go, all of the things that we call attention seeking are really just that way of like their body saying, okay, I don't like this. I don't want to be alone anymore. And it can go even further than that. Like it can kind of make some kids kind of wiry where they can't lay down, where they're like jumping on the bed, where they're misbehaving and they're silly and they're laughing. And you might think, oh yeah, they're overtired or they're undertired, these kinds of things. But often it's that their body is becoming unregulated. Their body is kind of freaking out inside, kind of like a little bit of an anxiety because they're not wanting to be alone. And I'm not saying like it's a necessarily like a separation anxiety thing or anything that's like wrong with your child. It's certainly not anything that they're doing intentional. It's just they probably don't even have a word for what they're feeling inside, but their body reacts. It's almost like an instinct. And so it's this is the thing, is that all of these things, we call it bedtime battles, right? Like even just that, it implies that like you're in this fight with your child and you need to win, but like there is no winning. Your child is not doing anything wrong. It is what it is. It's almost like an instinct, and the best way to deal with that is through prevention.
Yeah, and I feel like even with like attention seeking, which I know you and I both don't use, but it's like it's focusing on the behavior and not focusing on the need. And same with like, yeah, the language that we use, the bedtime battles, or focusing on the struggle and not like what needs to happen beneath the surface for it to happen. And that can really, I mean, just it has you looking at the wrong place, and therefore your solutions are in the wrong place because you have to go deeper to really start to shift things, to lay that, prevention down, to lay that foundation down, for them to feel connected and to head into bedtime better regulated.
And
Right.
when
So
they
we, oh, sorry, go ahead.
when they call it attention seeking, the advice, the standard advice is, well, don't do it. It'll reward them and they'll do it again tomorrow kind of thing, right? If they're asking for the water, the extra story, or they're wanting you to stay, don't do it. Otherwise, they're going to expect it tomorrow. But that's like this like superficial kind of band-aid thinking, like you're saying, fixing the problem, but it's not fixing the root. If they're needing the attention, if it is the attention, then giving them the attention is what solves the problem, not withholding it, but giving it in a way that isn't them demanding it, right? It's like you solving the problem before it happens, right? Giving them what they need so they feel fulfilled and connected to you and have that attention before they have to act out to get it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unless they act out, I want to correct that because it's not intentional. But, you know, see, like the language comes out of us. It's how we speak, right?
I mean, it's hardwired, even in like you and me and folks who all know better, like we practice in the need space, but that behavior space still comes out so much because it's hardwired into us as well. Right? It's hardwired into everyone. It's so deeply ingrained in our culture and the way that we talk about and think about our littles that we have to very intentionally counterbalance it and still sneaks in. It still sneaks in. So we have norms, right? Parents are getting a lot of incorrect information around normal, typical sleep and that need to have support and what it looks like to get towards those independent bedtimes and the need for connection versus like focusing on that attention kind of behavioral surface level stuff. What else would you say is a missing piece that parents aren't hearing or aren't getting the right information around when it comes to the toddler and the big kid sleep?
There's this overemphasis on calm, and kids don't do calm. Kids are silly and hyper and have so much energy. And, you know, most kids don't really get as much exercise as they should or outdoor time as they should, you know? And so, you know, trying to like force a kid to sit still, you know, it doesn't always work very well. And so then, you know, or really anything, even like the bedtime battle piece that we're talking about, where you're trying to, you know, set boundaries or anything, there's always so much stress in bedtime. You're trying to get them to calm, you're trying to get them to do this, and they're not doing it. And so that stress piece is tricky. You know, I think focus less on calm in the typical sense of needing to be like Zen, like yoga mode, right? And more so just on being kind of connected and grounded together, if that makes sense, because you can influence so many beautiful things that way. I'm not explaining it well. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the way that you're showing up, the energy that you're bringing spills over into your kiddo. And yeah, when we focus on a calm child, I feel like that can put a lot of pressure on you, right? Because you're like, oh my God, why are they not calm? And then that just creates more tension and stress headed into bedtime. My kids are always wild in the evening and, you know, they like just, you know, you kind of have to get it out before they can calm down. And like talk about not getting enough exercise. My 10-year-old is in fifth grade and his school starts middle school there. And so they just lost so much outside time after last year. And we're all kind of like readjusting. I'm like, you're not out like for PE that it's inside. You're not outside at lunch anymore. You've lost like a lunch recess. So you just eat lunch inside. And it's just like, it's such a shift, even at, you know, fifth grade age, that, you know, his amount of big body movement has definitely changed. And you think about like, as kids go from preschool to kindergarten, and like into school, that's another big jump for a lot of kiddos where they're expected to be still more and not get all the lovely wiggles and energy out during the day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard. And then combine that where, you know, they're full of energy and having trouble being still and you're trying to get them calm. It's not working. And you're trying to fast forward through the day because you're tired and done and are ready for couch time. And, you know, and you just end up rushing them and you push them and it puts pressure on everything. And that stress is so contagious. And so,
I don't know about you, but I feel like in myself and a lot of the parents I support, the more things you have on your like list to do after your kiddo is asleep, like the more pressure you put on yourself and sometimes then on them to like get through the bedtime routine. And it's just like, because you have your eye so much on your post bedtime evening, that's almost like you're getting in your own way of your own goal, you know?
Wow.
I do that sometimes. I still do that sometimes when I'm just like, I want to go to sleep. Go to sleep, child. But that's because we're not perfect, right? We are sleep coaches with our own messy, lovely children. And it's not always easy to do in practice.
Yeah, and bedtime is hard that way. You know, I often have my clients do this thing where they treat parenting like a day job as much as you can. Obviously, it's not the same thing, but where when the kids are in bed, you clock out from like the household chores, like no more cleaning, no more, you know, to-do list things. You just relax, do something for you. And obviously, if your kids need you, you know, you have to clock back in, but do your best to clock out during the time when your kids are asleep. And, you know, that helps reduce some of the pressure a little bit, because there's always the, you know, I still need to do X, Y, Z. And, you know, like that anxiety totally just as the clock ticks later and you realize you still have to make lunches or still have to, you know, flip the laundry over or make your bed or whatever it is, just like eats at you. Mm-hmm. It's not 100% perfect solution, because then you're sometimes still feeling like, oh, well, this is cutting into my couch time or whatever. So like either way, it's tricky, but I feel like it's easier when there's less on the to-do list.
Absolutely. Definitely. And that takes, I think, some planning and thinking, but it's a great way to make your bedtime or your kids' bedtime easier for you, and then give you some downtime so that you can head into your bedtime in a better place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I feel like we've hit a lot of the big things that come up a lot when it comes to toddler, you know, sleep, and just that shift that, you know, you're going from this baby to this toddler and then to this preschooler and then to a bigger kid, and that those phases really change and evolve, and yet your kiddos still need you. It's just how you show up and the tools you can use are different. You know, as we wrap up, any sort of last thoughts on sort of the navigating the crazy wild world of sleep information, you know, out there?
Oh gosh, stay off Google.
No, everyone at every age, right?
Like stay off Google, follow your gut is the big thing. And I think regardless of whether something's normal, whether something's not, if you're struggling, if you're stressed, if like sleep and bedtime is stressful for you, like don't tough it out, right? Like ask mm-hmm. for help, whether it's lightening your load in other ways or whether it's like reaching out to, you know, a sleep coach. I heard somebody say recently that hiring a coach is self-care, and you know,
I
agree. Like I hadn't ever really thought about that before, but you know, it doesn't matter what you're going through. Like you define the crisis, right? And like, it doesn't have to be a crisis. If you're struggling and it's stressful, make a change. I see so many families who, you know, connect to me on Instagram and, you know, we'll be chatting, and then they'll reach out to me like 6 months or a year later and they're still struggling. And I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, don't, yes, kids need support. They're not going to be 100% responsive or independent. You're going to still have to be responsive, but it doesn't mean you have to wait it out. So many families just wait it out. They're going to grow out of it. You know, they might, but can you wait? Can your mental health wait? Right? I guess that's what I want to say. You don't have
no,
to
I
wait.
I love that. Support matters. Like, we're not supposed to be able to figure it out on our own or do it all on our own in parenting in general. And so support really, really can make a big difference.
Huge.
All right. So tell everyone where they can find you, and we'll put your info in the show notes and anything you want me to link to, but where can folks find you?
I am mostly on Instagram. That's where I hang out the most, but I do have a Facebook group as well, which is Gentle and Responsive Mamas Seeking Sleep Insanity. And, you know, I've got a website, and yeah, I run little webinars occasionally, but you know, if you follow me on Instagram, I've got like a little highlight wheel. If you see that, the little circles underneath like my bio. I've got a bunch of like mini trainings in there from going live on Instagram. I go live occasionally. So lots of free tips on there. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming and chatting about toddler sleep with me. It's fun as always.
Thanks so much for having me, Kim.
Thank you for joining me today. I hope this episode left you feeling more informed, confident, and encouraged on your sleep journey. And just a reminder before you go that nothing in this episode is individualized to your specific sleep situation, nor is it to be taken as medical advice. Take what resonates, ignore what doesn't, and check with your healthcare provider about any medical concerns. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast so that you'll never miss an episode. And take a moment to rate, review, or share an episode you love on social media. All of that helps parents just like you find me, this podcast, and this gentle and responsive sleep information. I'll see you next time.